Good Erev Shabbos. Today's daf in Shavuos is Lamed Aleph. We're on Lamed Amud Beis. We're toward the bottom of the Amud. Right after the two dots, it's the second wide line on the Amud Beis. Rabbi Yemer Havayada Leisadusa Lamar Zutra. We started yesterday the fourth parak of Masechta Shavuos. We're talking about Shavuos Ha'edus. A person makes an oath and he swears that he doesn't have testimony, whether he makes it on his own or whether he's adjured by others. He's placed under oath. So he has to bring a carbon shavuah. So the carbon shavuah is a carbon olah v'yared, as we've been discussing now. That's been our mesechta, carbon olah v'yared. Right, the first three psukim in Parakeh of Vayikra details the occasions in the Torah where you bring a carbon olah v'yared. So one of them is the carbon edus, which brings us to our topic. So as long as we're talking about shavuah edus, so the Gemara, you brought the Gemara a chance, an opportunity to talk a little bit about the court itself. The court itself, the courtroom itself. Who stands, who sits, that's been our topic the second half of yesterday's daf. And so we're continuing along that topic about who stands, who sits. So if you remember, so in terms of standing, witnesses stand. Witnesses have an obligation to stand, right? The Pasuk says, Vamdu, Shnei Anashim, the two men stand. The two men are referring to the Edim, although yesterday we waffled a little bit on that, but let's just assume we're talking about the two Edim, so they have an obligation to stand. As far as the litigants are concerned, so stand, sit, machlokis, maybe during deliberation, maybe at the Gemar Din, there's a distinction to be made. But anyway, but certainly the witnesses have to stand. That part we got. And the Gemar now follows all this up with a quick story. Rav Yemer Havayad Le Sadusa. So Rav Yemer had testimony. Lamar Zutra, Asala Kamedah Memer. So it goes to the courtroom of a Memer. So Ozvin Lekulu. So a Memer tells everyone to go sit down. And they're witnesses, and they're sitting down, and they're witnesses. Amalei Ravashi, La Memer, so Ravashi does not understand the procedure of a Memer. What are you doing? You're having them sit down? That seems strange. So, Va'amar Ula Machlokis Bebali Dinam Va'be'idim Divrei Hakol Be'amida. We said in yesterday's daf, everybody stands. The witnesses stand. I'm sorry. Everyone agrees that the witnesses stand. So, what are you having? How come you're having him sit? Amalei Hayase Ve'ase. So to which a Memer? The witnesses, right? The avabe edim divrei hakol be'amida. Everyone says that the witnesses need to stand. Right now, we're talking about the witnesses. So he has testimony. So he's providing testimony, and yet he was sat down. So to which the Gemara says, "Hayase v'hayase." The Gemara says, "Yeah, but over here there are competing values. Meaning, one value is the ase, the mitzvah ase, that a witness has to stand. V'amdu. On the other hand, there's another competing value, which is he's a talmid chacham." So, and it's inappropriate for a talmid chacham that he should be standing and we're sitting. That's not the appropriate conduct. Meaning he should be sitting and we should be standing for the talmid chacham. So hayaseh v'hayaseh. Aseh dekvar tara adiv. And now when you have competing values, a mitzvah essay that the witnesses should be standing. A competing value of he's a talmid chacham. It's not right, pasnish, that he should be standing. It's a lack of kavod Torah that he's standing and we're standing in his presence. So with that stated, so hayaseh v'hayaseh, which value has more? So that's what Amemar said. That's why I feel that the Kavod HaTorah, Asay, is of more value than the Asay of Amdu. Fine. It could be that maybe he didn't agree. Maybe. Anything I'll say from this point going forward will just simply be guessing and speculation. But yeah. Okay. With that stated now, the upcoming Gemaras, which is going to be covering half of today's daf, it's going to go into the Lamed Aleph towards the bottom of the Amud. So it's now a fantastic Gemara is speaking to the Midah of Emes. The Midah of Emes is that we should try to be, to the best of our ability, truthful and honest. Certain times that lying is okay, acceptable, encouraged, right? Mishanim ibn Ashalom, if it's to keep the peace, so then it's a good opportunity to lie. It's a good time to lie. And the Gemara is also talking about how under certain circumstances one has a heter, but the pasuk says midvar sheker tirchak. You should distance yourself from sheker, meaning it's not an absolute, it's not a black and white, but it's certainly to the best of our ability we should be truthful. Now, 13 examples are brought up in the Gemara right now in terms of how honest one should be. One should be as honest as possible, and especially the meat of emes in the courtroom. So one can only imagine that's the place where really we should try to pronounce the meat of emes, because that's obviously in the courtroom we want as much as possible the meat of emes to come forward. So there are 13 different scenarios, examples in which we're going to be talking about the meat of emes, and most of it having to do with the courtroom, if not all of it. Okay, so the Gemara here gives simanim. The way the Gemara breaks up is a little bit strange, meaning it's 13 different examples, and then we have one group of simanim, we have another group of simanim. Okay, anyway. So immediately after this, simanim tana rabbanan. So here we go with number one. All right, I counted it up. Okay. So tana rabbanan, the number one. Minayin l'dayan shelo yaseh sanegrin l'dvarav. So how do we know that a dayan should not be defensive for what he says? What does that mean, defensive for what he says? Rashi writes over here, I'm reading the Rashi. Imdan din v'libo nokfo. So let's say he states he has an opinion, and now his heart is pounding, meaning, I don't know if I'm right. So lomar shuhu toa. So, and now he's thinking to himself, you know what, I think I made a mistake. But he already articulated his position. Now it's embarrassing after you articulate a position to have to go back and change your position in front of other people. So human nature is such where we're going to be defensive of our position and we're going to try to defend our position even though we may know that we're wrong. So the first rule of the 13 is fight that human nature. Right? Rashi writes. So imdan din v'libonok for lomar shu'tova lo yachzik dvar lahavi rayos lamidam. So don't bring proofs trying to say that you're right, but shehu bosh lachzor, because you're going to be embarrassed to retract on what you said. Ela lechotz dadim yachzor lo tzi din lamito. If you now know that what you're saying is wrong and you have to cross yourself and you have to change your position, so do so. It's hard. It obviously goes against human nature. That's number one. Number two, minayin l'dayin shelo yeshiv tamid bor lefanav. Don't, if you're a judge, so don't have a student who is, right, a board, all right, someone who's unlearned, so don't have him sit in front of you. So, tamalama midvar shekher tirchak. What's the problem with having him sit in front of you? Again, I turn to Rashi. Rashi writes, lisa v'litam bedini moshe lo yitaehu. Because he's not going to say things that, which are correct, right, he's not going to make good arguments, and he's going to mislead you into making arguments that are somewhat faulty. Number three, minayin l'dayin sheyodeh l'chaver shu gazlan, v'chein eit sheyodeh b'chaver shu gazlan, minayin shelo yitzarif imo tam shelo yitzarif imo. So let's say you have a dayan who knows that his colleague is a gazlan, really not fit to be a judge. Or let's say you're a witness and you know that the second witness is a gazlan, not fit to be a witness. So how do I know that I shouldn't have him join you? So tam alamer midvar sheker tirchag. Now, what does that mean? How do I know he shouldn't join you? He shouldn't join you because he's a gazlan. What exactly is the Gemara saying over here? So once again, I turn to Rashi. Rashi says va'alfa pishayi dos emes, meaning I know this is right. Right? I'm saying this as a judge. I'm saying this as a witness. I know that this is correct. I saw it. It's correct. Now over here, what is it? What's wrong? It's just a judicial matter of I need two witnesses. Okay, I know you're not qualified, but really it doesn't matter because I know this is correct. I saw it. I'm going to testify. You'll just join me. You're puzzle edus, but it's fine because ultimately I know that this is right. What the Gemara is telling us is it's not right. Meaning, if the second witness is a gazlan, if the colleague Dayan is a gazlan, so even though you're coming to the right conclusion, you're going about it in the wrong manner, and that's not right. That's not correct. Number four, minayin l'dayin sheyodeh b'din shu meruma shelo yomar hol ve'idem me'idem achatchenu. You know the case is fishy. You know it. Right? Din maruma. Right? Somebody's speaking an untruth over here. However, in terms of the formalities, we got all the formalities. We got the witnesses testifying. They came out good. They survived Drisha v'chakira. By Maminos, by the way, Remembrance and Hedron, we dispense with Drisha v'chakira. But anyway, in other words, everything checks. All the boxes check, but I know it just doesn't smell good. Something's wrong. So, but you know what? Let's go through with the judicial proceeding. Let's have a verdict. Let's have a conclusion. And if the witnesses are lying, so then it's on their neck, and let them have to deal with it. So the Gemara says again, the dying should not just simply allow that to happen. But if there's something fishing going on, so then the dying should try to the best of his ability to uncover that, and not just simply go through with the proceedings and just simply assign fault now to the witnesses. Let them have to deal with it. Huh? What's that?
No, he's not sure there's
something. No, in other words, din maruma, again, I'll read the Rashi. Shalom mitoch divrei edim she'ein edusa memes. Meaning he's hearing them, but he knows they're not telling the truth. I mean, again, right, the Rambam, when you read the Rambam at the beginning of Hilchos Edus, you get that sense from the Rambam. Meaning, look, witnesses are human. And so ultimately, you know, how do we know the truth? In other words, the judges have to do to the best of their ability to discern what the emes is. So, again, if you have a judge who has experienced and like seen countless cases back and forth, he'll know whether or not the witnesses are, again, when I say no, meaning he'll have excellent intuition in terms of whether the witnesses are telling the truth or not. And if he feels that something is off over here, he should, and he's got good intuition, he should go with it. He should go with the intuition. Okay. Tom Alum.
What does he do then? They pass.
Right.
What's his right to dismiss it?
No, not dismiss it. In other words, again, the Gemara doesn't say what he should do, but if I'm going to guess, I'd say keep interrogating. All right, keep pushing them. Okay, and maybe even be a little bit creative, but do something. Okay, so that was number four. So we've covered so far four of the 13. We are now in Lamed Aleph, Lamed Aleph. Another set of simanim, and we go back to more. Number five. Minan the Tamash Yoshev Lifnei Rabba Veroz Lechus La'ani V'chov La'ashir. Minan Shalo Yishtok. So let's say the student is sitting in front of the Rebbe, and now the poor person's there, and his Rebbe, who's being the judge, is judging the case, but what seemingly is not correct. And he can make an argument on behalf of the Ani, or he can make an incriminating argument against the person who's wealthy. So minayin shelo yishtok. So again, when it comes to human nature, it's not a pleasant truth, but it's a truth. Meaning that when you see somebody wealthy, so you try to find favor for the wealthy person. When you see somebody who's more destitute, so you're like, okay, nebuch, but he's guilty. It's easier to find an incriminating argument for him. So what the Talmud should do, if in fact he has an argument that would help the ani, that would incriminate the usher, he should say so. Minayin shelo yishtok tam alamar mitvar sheker tirchak. Minayin l'tamash sheros rabo shetor bedin. Number six. Number six is a subtlety, and it's really good. Minayin l'tamash sheros rabo shetor bedin. Let's say the Talmud sees that his Rebbe, who's a judge right now, judging the case, is making an error, an egregious error in judging the case. And shelo yomar, amtim lo achig mareno v'astareno v'ebna mishali. So now what the student should not say is as follows. You know what? I'll wait till the end. Meaning, instead of catching him early and basically, propping him up, what I'll do is I'll wait till the end. In other words, then as we get to the end, then I'll call him out on the mistake. And now I'm going to get full credit now for changing the verdict. This entire case now will basically be called by my name. Meaning, and I'll get full credit. And again, it's human nature that we want credit and we want more credit. And so a student shouldn't do this. So Midvar Sheker Tirchak again says that in this subtlety where you can nip it in the bud, you can just simply say to your Rebbe, wait one second, wait, before you head down that path, let me redirect you. Okay, good. And that's what you should do as a student and not take the credit. Number seven. Minan l'talmud shamar lo rabba yodea ta. B, Shimnosanli mea mana, eini mevade. Mana yeshli etzoploni ve eini alav ela aid echad. Minayin shelo yitzarif imo. Your Rebbe puts you in a terrible position. Now, I guess you can call into question, by the way, the morals of the Rebbe. Admittedly, suffice to say that the Rebbe puts you in a terrible position. Where the Rebbe says to you, look, you know me. You know I'm honest. You know I've been telling you. You've been a Talmud of mine for years. You know I only tell the truth. So do me the following favor. That guy owes me money, and I only have one witness right now. So can you do me a favor? Everything is honest. Everything is it's all legit. I just need you as my second witness. Okay. So can you do that favor for me? Ugh, terrible. Anyway. So ve'enli ela eidecha minayin shelo yitzarifimo tam alom midvar sheker tirchak. So the Gemara says, so we learn out from Vidvar Sheker Tirchak that you shouldn't serve as a second witness, even though your Rebbe's telling you, trust me, it's fine, it's good. So the Gemara says, hi, me. I was thinking it. So hi, me, Dvar Sheker Tirchak, nafka, havadi shakur mashakir, v'rachmana amalo sana b'recha ichakir. So the Gemara says, I understand, this is not a subtlety of Midvar Sheker Tirchak, this is a blatant lie. All these cases that we've been discussing over here are subtleties or nuances. There's no nuance over here. You're asked to come into court and make up a story of something you didn't see. So Elikagon da Amarle Vada Chatzahadisli Vaata Kumasam Velo Tema Velo Midi. So the Gemara says, okay. So let's make the case a little more subtle. The more subtle version of this case would look like this. The Rebbe says to you, look, you're not going to testify on my behalf. You don't know. But here's what I'd like you to do. I'm going to approach my borrower. And I'm going to appear as if I have two witnesses, meaning I have one witness. And what I'm going to have you do is I'm going to have you stand together with the other witness. You're not going to testify. And all we're going to do is I'm going to say to him, look, if you don't pay me, I'm going to take you to court. And with now being stood, having two people stand by me, so he's going to think to himself that I have now a case. But you don't have to say anything, and I'm not asking you to testify on my behalf. Oh, okay, good. Now this is nuance. This is subtlety. Because now you're not actually saying a lie. So good. That's more of a case of nuance. And again, right? I liked your advice. Go get a new Rebbe. Yeah. Okay. Fine. Now that you know, obviously it's a reflection of poor morals on the part of the Rebbe. But the Gemara's point really is on the Talmud. Meaning you, the Talmud, you know that this is not right. You know that you're being deceptive in nature, and you shouldn't be. You shouldn't be part of it. Number 8. Minayin lanosha bechaver mana shelo yomer atena b'masayim kedei shiyoda li b'mana v'yizchayv leshvul v'agal galav shvul b'makom acher. So the Gemara's 8th case goes something like this. Let's say I have an outstanding case against an individual, and I'm saying over the Gemara like Rashi. Let's say I actually even have a second case against the individual. The second case happens to be on property. Now, you know the halacha is that you don't make a shvul on property. Meaning you can make a shvul on movables, on metaltel, and on mamon, but you don't make a shvul on karka, xeris hakasa, fine. So I say like this. So look, I have two cases pending against this individual, and one of them has to do with property, and I can't make him make a shvua. I have one witness, but I can't make him make a shvua, whatever. Let me say it better. Even if I have two witnesses, I can't make him make a shvua, it's karka. So here's what I'll do. It's a pretty slick move. What I'll do is, he also owes me $100, so I'm going to make a claim that he owes me $200. It's a fictitious claim. I'm stretching the truth, to say the least. In other words, but I know what he's going to do. He's going to deny that he owes me $200, and he's going to admit to having owed me $100. Got him. So now, this is a classic shvua known as moda b'miksas. So now he admits to owing part of the claim, and now we have a halacha of gilgul shvua. The halacha of gilgul shvua is that once somebody owes me a shvua, I could be megalgal, I can roll other shvuas on him, other shvuas which under normal circumstances I cannot make him do. But once I got him in a shvua, so then I'm gonna have him stay in court. Oh, and by the way, also make a shvua for me about the property you owe me. So in order to get to the point of gilgul shvua, so I have to say something which isn't true. I have to start off by making a claim that he owes me $200. So this again is dvar sheker tirchak. Stay away from falsehood. So the Gemara says that's number 8. Number 9. Minayin lanosha bechaver mana v'tanu masayim shelo yomer achapren bebeisin v'od lechutz lebeisin kedei shelo yischayv lo shvua v'lo yigalgal ay shvua mimakom acher. Now we're talking from the basically it's the same story, but now we're talking from the other side, from the side of the nitan, the defendant. A person comes over, the defendant says, "You owe me $200." The defendant's now saying in his head, "It's not true. I don't owe him $200. I owe him $100." But here's the problem: if I now say that in court, I'm going to have to make a shvua. So you know what I'll do? I'll say like this. In court, I'll say I owe you nothing. So kofar bakol, there's no shvua. The two of us are going to step outside of court, and then what I'll do is I'll admit that I owe him $100. Okay, and what did he gain by that? What he gained by that is now he doesn't have to make a shvua. And now that he doesn't have to make a shvua, there's not going to be a problem of gilgul shvua. And so, is that right? So the Gemara says once again, tamalama midvar shakir tirchak, it's not right. Because even though in your mind you only owe him $100, what difference does it make whether I admit in court or admit out of court? No, if you think you owe him $100 and you're in the courtroom, say, yeah, I owe him $100. Even though that's going to result in a shvua, okay, but you have to be honest. You think you owe him $100, you have to admit in court that you owe him $100. Three people are owed money by the same person. So this debtor now is indebted to three different people, and he's not paying anybody. So finally, the three lenders get together, and the three lenders say, "Look, this guy's the worst." So what we'll do now is that one lender will go to court as a lender, and the other two lenders will go to court as witnesses. Now, they really aren't witnesses, meaning they're just lenders themselves. But in other words, in order to get money out of this guy, and they all agree that this guy owes money, so two of the lenders will serve as witnesses, and they'll go to court, and they'll get money out of the guy.
Witnesses, and
And no more than what the guy owes, meaning they're not going to extract more money out of him, but it'll be a legality to just get the money out of him. But of course, a legality that requires a falsehood. Again, it's not blatant falsehood, because from the lender's standpoint, they're also owed money. It's true the guy owes money. So in other words, so it's not a blatant falsehood, but again, midvar sheker tirchak, you shouldn't be involved in such an activity. That was number 10. We're up to number 11. Minayin l'shnayim shabau l'din, echad lavush smartutim ve'echad lavush itztalus. They go to court and one is dressed appropriately, he's dressed beautifully, and the other one's mitzmartut. As my mother would say, shmatas. So the, sorry. not everyone here speaks Yiddish. You know, I'm one of those people who don't speak Yiddish. But, rags, dressed in rags. And obviously now as they walk into court, so the guy looks like is dressed in a suit, obviously, right? Like nowadays, you go to the courtroom, you want to look good. So he looks great, he looks presentable. The other one does not look good. So he looks like a shmata, another expression. So anyway, so lavush itzalos bas me'amana she'omrim lo lavush kamoso or habisha kamoscha. And so now, once again, like we said in yesterday's daf, this is a review of what we saw yesterday. In that, you can't do anything blatantly that will show active favoritism to one litigant over the other litigant. And so basically, we say to the guy wearing the fancy suit, look, here you go. Here are your two options. Either you dress in rags like him, or you provide him the proper clothing so that he looks like you. Again, the courtroom has to be a balanced arena where at least both sides have a chance of making their arguments in court. Right, the guy with the smart tutim, the guy with the shmatas is going to go into the courtroom. He's going to look at the guy in the suit. He's like, oh, I don't have a chance. And even though he has claims and he has tainas, he's going to be uncomfortable saying them. So we want to create an environment where everyone's comfortable making a taina. Tam alam midvar sheker tirchak. That's hard.
Then
all this is to the best of our ability. Meaning somebody's wealthy. I mean, that's, you know, it's not his fault that he's wealthy. That's just, you know, that's a reality and a fact. That's not
under,
because even just we're talking about the perception, the going into court and having an obvious perception of a injustice, of a lack of fairness. Everything's midvar sheker tirchak. It all comes back to dvar sheker tirchak. You should try to keep everything as balanced as possible, as fair as possible. So there was a person who came in front of the court of Rava, and Rava says to him, hey, what's it called? That suit is too nice. Take it off. And then afterwards, come into court. Right, Phil, you like the Rashi. Rashi over here writes, where is it? Here we go. Puz mekaichu. Come on, and polios chashuvim, right? Calzones belaz, right? Calzones.
Well, calzones.
Is pants, right? Right in modern, right? Right the right, but in Spanish also it's a reference to pants. Okay. Anyway, v'chusel adino. Okay, fine. Anyway, back to the Gemara. We're up to number 12. We have two more to go. Minayin l'dain shoyishma divrei baldin konim shiyavo baldin chaveru. Okay, don't be a litigant going into court. The other litigant's not there yet? Okay, here, judge, do me a favor. Come here, let me tell you the story. Don't do that. So the Gemara says, and finally, number 13. So here, this is a little more subtle. Like a taste. So you shouldn't go into courtroom and basically, in other words, you're not going to say over the whole case, but basically give a little taste, a little flavor of what the case is going to look like. A little foreshadowing, if you will. So once again, tamalom midvar sheker tirchak. So again, don't do that, meaning you shouldn't open your mouth, discuss any matter of the case without the other litigant being there in the courtroom. Rav Kahana, masne lo sisa lo sasi. So Rav Kahana learns that from the pasuk. The pasuk says, lo sisa shem ashav, where you are not allowed to report something which is incorrect. And not only are you not allowed to, you're not allowed to hear it, you're also not lo sasi. You're not allowed to cause others to hear it as well. So in other words, you can't hear it, you can't say it. Ve'asher lo tov asah besoch amav. The Gemara caps all this off with a pasuk from Sefer Yechezkel. Rashi says over here, this is from Sefer Yechezkel. You know, Rashi didn't have the notes on the side of the Gemara. So, in other words, to know the psukim, you had to know the psukim. So Rashi, apparently knew his audience didn't have such bekias. So anyway, Va'asher lo tov aseh b'toch amav, Rav amar zeh ba b'harsha, Ushmol amar zeh lokech sadeh sheyesh alav asikin. So the Navi Yecheskel is talking about somebody who's up to no good. Again, certainly a subtlety. What subtlety is he describing? So the Gemara gives two examples. One is basically a person who basically gives over power of attorney to somebody else to go and try the case in the courtroom. What you and I would call, sorry, no disrespect to anybody, a lawyer. So the no disrespect, but you shouldn't have somebody do so. Rashi over here, right? I'm reading the Rashi. Zabah Barsha. Umit aber al riv lo, and gets involved in a case which is not his. Meaning, if you're a litigant, then you're the baldover, so it's your case. So that's fine. So you want to fight your fights, that's fine. But fighting a fight that's not your fight, vishema risha noach lo, v'noach lipshara, yosa mizeh. Because if you go into court and you go into litigation, so you're going to be open to the idea of pshara. However, somebody else is fighting on your behalf, he's not going to be open to pshara. Okay. In other words, what are you going to do? You're going to make pshar with money that's not your money? Meaning you're ready to fight and fight hard. And
what can be your shliach b'kamo? Like a purchase way back when
shluch b'kamo are things like, you know, having somebody mekadesh a woman for me. But in other words, but to fight on my behalf, meaning to adjudicate in a courtroom. So that's that the Navi Yecheskel says he shouldn't do it. Right, correct. In other words, in the basin system that we do have something that looks like a lawyer, and obviously in the legal system that we live in, the country that we live in, obviously lawyers is, you know, that's the norm, that's not the exception. I understand that. But on the other hand, the Gemara is advising, you know, to avoid it. Okay. Obviously there's a lot more to speak about the matter, but Rashi is providing a very good explanation in terms of what the concern is. The concern is that you're open to making some sort of compromise. The lawyer is not interested in making a compromise, and you want the case to end and amicably. Okay, let's continue. Oh, I'm sorry. And the second one, which I didn't explain, sorry. And Shmuel Amar Zelokech Sada Sheishal Avetzikin. You buy a land that's up that's a contested land. And so you're buying a contested land, and you feel that look, you have koach, you have power, and so the current owner right now, so he's got a lot of people who are making claims against against his ownership of the land, and so right now basically he says, look, here's what I'll do, I'll just basically kick the land up to somebody who's much more powerful than I am, and so that'll take away the asikin. Lo tov, it's not right, it's not proper, meaning that the person who is the owner of the land should fight his fights. If he has enough evidence to prove that the land belongs to him, great. Otherwise, the land is in fact going to go to the people who are claiming that belongs to him. But to kick it up to somebody stronger, just so that the stronger person is going to now be able to hold the land simply because of his strength, again, lo tov, that's the pasuk in Yecheskel, that's just simply not right. Okay, and we learned together in the Mishnah, who is eligible to bring this carbon shvus to someone who could testify. But if it's somebody who cannot testify in a court, so his swearing that he doesn't know the information is not going to bring about a carbon shvus ha'edus. And who is it coming to exclude? So our standard candidates. Lafuke mai amar rapapa lafuke melech. So one suggestion of the Amoraim rapapa's suggestion is that we're talking about a king. As we learned in the second parak of Sanhedrin, a king cannot testify. He cannot serve as a judge. He cannot testify. A king is separated from the entire judicial process. So, if a king, for whatever reason, hard to imagine the case, but if a king swears he doesn't know testimony, he can't testify. He's therefore not eligible for the karban shvuas ha'edus. And Rav Acha bar Yaakov amar lafuki misachei b'kubya. And Rav Acha bar Yaakov says we're excluding the gambler. The third parak of Sanhedrin, now we're just moving ahead, one parak in the Masechta, the third parak in Sanhedrin gives us a list of people who can't testify in the courtroom, even though min HaTorah they're okay, but mid Rabbanan they're pasul. And one of them is the gambler. The gambler mid Rabbanan cannot testify. The Gemara there gives two reasons why the gambler is disqualified from testifying. One, says the Gemara, is that maybe it's an asmachta lo kanya, maybe because when you gamble, it is not a binding agreement, and therefore when you take somebody else's money, he doesn't really agree to give you his money, so it's tantamount to stealing. It's ke'en gzela, Or the other issue is, or maybe it's bona fide, but and the other issue of the Gemara over there is because Einu Asukim Yeshiva Sha'olam, the person is not a productive member of society. And so that's why he can't testify in a court. Either way, Midrabanan, the Mistachia Bekubi is going to be Pasla Eidus. And so when you have now a gambler who swears he has no testimony, well, he can't testify anyway, so therefore he's not eligible for the carbon. Now, Mandama, just give me 1 second. Mandama, Mesachet B'Kubia, Kol Shekein Melech. Now, if you say that our Mishnah is excluding Mesachet B'Kubia, for sure the Melech is going to be excluded, because the Melech is Pasul Mida Araisa. Mandama, Melech, Hava Mesachet B'Kubia, Mida Araisa, Mechsechaze, V'Rabbananu De Pasluhu. And then if you interpret our Mishnah to be talking about a king, well, a king is Pasul Mida Torah. A Mesachet B'Kubia is only Pasul Mida Rabbanan. You can make the argument, and the Gemara is making the argument, that your psul is only midrabbanan, and that means that midaraisa you are eligible to testify, and therefore if you swear you don't have testimony, even though rabbinically you will not be accepted, but because minatorah you're eligible, therefore you will bring the carbon olaviyarid. Yes, Ben?
Besides gamblers, we also have like people that raise pigeons and stuff like that. How come they're not mentioned here?
When the Gemara says Mesachet B'Kubia, it means all those types of cases. Okay, the Mesachet B'Kubia just happens to be the prototypical example.
A gambler.
Okay, good. Okay, the halacha is at least according to the Rama. The Rama says that it is not an asmachta. It's a bona fide king, and it really does work. It's a sugya in Sanhedrin. The Tosa says over there that the money has to be out there and on the table before you start gambling. Anyway. That's Rabbi Yehuda over there in the Mishnah, and the Gemara over there, Pasan's like Rabbi Yehuda. Yeah, that's the Gemara's conclusion. Correct. Okay, Bifnei Beisim V'Shalom, Bifnei Beisim V'Chule B'Mai Kemiflegi. Okay, what we have now in the Mishnah is my focus in terms of when are you eligible for the carbon of Yared when you make a false Shavua. Okay, there are a lot of moving parts of this next piece of Gemara. I'm going to say quickly and probably too quickly, so I apologize. But in other words, there's going to be a lot of moving pieces. So let's set ourselves up so that we understand what's happening in the upcoming Gemara. Okay, the Torah in describing the Shvuos Eidos describes that a person is adjured, meaning he's placed under oath. And while placed under oath, he denies that he has testimony. He says no, and he says, "Are you ready to say that under oath?" And he says, "Amen." So that's mushma mipi acherim. And the Torah in describing the Shavuos Eidos describes mushma mipi acherim. Now, if you're chayav karban olav yared and mushma mipi acherim, it seems to be a really simple argument. Well, if you're adjured by others and you're going to be chayav karban, so if you make the shvuah on your own, you're for sure going to be chayav karban. It's a really sensible kal v'chomer. In fact, it's so sensible the Gemara is going to say it in just a little bit from now. But anyway, that is Shavuos Eidos. There's another shvuah known as Shavuos Pikadon. In fact, that's the next parak. The next parak we're dealing with is going to be Shavuos Pikadon. Fifth parak of the Masechta. Yep. So Shavuos Pikadon is where you are entrusted to watch somebody, is an object for somebody, and then he comes to you and you deny. You deny you got it, or you make a claim of it was stolen, it was lost, whatever. In other words, you make a claim that would exonerate yourself. And meanwhile, your claim was just a fabrication. You lied. So under those circumstances, that's referred to as a shvuos apikadon, and it's going to bring about a certain liability if you lie falsely. Now, by shvuos apikadon, the Torah there says the person made the shvuah on his own. Right? Mushpa mipi atzmo. So now we have two parshas in the Torah. One is shvuos eidos, and the other one shvuos apikadon. Shvuos eidos, the Torah's description over there, is mushma mipi acherim. In Shavuos HaPikadon, the Torah's description over there is mushma mipi atzmo. Now, we have a debate in our Mishnah between Rav Meir and the Chachamim, when is the person going to be chayav karban olav yared? So, according to the sheet of Rav Meir, the karban olav yared is in the courtroom, whether you are sworn in, or whether you swear yourself, in either circumstances, you're going to be chayav karban olav yared. Out of the courtroom, according to Rabbi Meir, if you swear on your own, so you're going to be chayav karban olav yared. If you can't be sworn in outside of the courtroom. There's no There's no room for that. There's no allowance for that. There's no scenario for that. But but if you swear outside the courtroom, according to a mayor, that also will bring about an eligibility to bring a carbon olav yared on the shuras ha'edus. The chachamim in the Mishnah said no. All this can only happen in the courtroom, not outside the courtroom. That's the sheet of the chachamim. So the carbon olav yared can only be brought when a person swears under oath, either under oath or swears on his own, that he has no testimony. But only in the courtroom. And so now what the Gemara is going to be doing, spending the next couple of minutes, is what is that machlok is going to be predicated on? So, b'may kamifli, that's the Gemara's question. Amru rabbanan kamidu rapapa b'domina minam b'domina v'uka b'atzra kamifligi. So they're having a debate which we've seen a number of times throughout Shas, and it basically goes like this. As I pointed out in the intro, there are two parshios. One, the Shavuos Ha'edus. Two, Shavuos HaPikado. And we are learning one from the other. How are we learning one from the other? Via Gzeirah Shavah. The Gemara actually never spells out the Gzeirah Shavah. Rashi over here does. The Gemara later on does. For our purposes right now, all we need to know is that it is a Gzeirah Shavah that connects the two. When I have a Gzeirah Shavah that are linking two different halachas, so what do we do in terms of taking the halachas from B and moving it over to A? Right? A, B, whatever. I'm just labeling. So when I take a halacha from A to B or from B to A using a gzeirah shavah, so there are two different methodologies. They're not different, but two different ways to apply the gzeirah shavah. One is domina omina. Domina omina means as follows: whatever the halacha is over there, we're going to take the halacha and we're going to move it over here, even though contextually it doesn't fit so well over here. I don't care. Meaning domina omina tells me that the halacha from over there, which is going to be brought over here via Gzeirah Shavah, is going to be the halacha over here, even though contextually it's a little out of place. Doesn't matter. Domina v'uka ba'asra tells me that I'll take the halacha from over there, I'll apply it over here, but I'll fit it into its proper context. That is domina mina versus domina v'uka ba'asra. And the Gemara now spells out that really this is the machlok chin remeir and the chachamim, and all this will come out hopefully a lot clearer as we go through this actual case inside. Rameir Savar, just one second. Rameir Savar, Domina Mina, Mipikadon. So Domina Mina, so we're learning it out from Shavuos HaPikadon. Ma Pikadon Mushma Mipiatzmo, Chayev Afedus Mushma Mipiatzmo, Chayev. So as I explained in the intro, but when it comes to Shavuos HaPikadon, the Torah's description over there is he made an oath on his own. So that's where we know, that's how we know that you make a Shavuos on your own, so you're Chayev by Shavuos HaPikadon. Now we're going to, through the Gzeirah Shavah, we're going to take the halacha and bring it over to Shavuos HaEdus. Umina. And now, when we plug it into Shavuos HaEdus, we're not going to fit it in contextually into Shavuos HaEdus, but rather, you make a Shavua on your own, you're Chayav. Done. Period. And it doesn't matter whether it's in court, it's outside of court, because don't mina umina. Just simply put it in there. Ma pikadna so bein bebezdin, bein shalom bebezdin, avedus bein bebezdin, bein shalom bebezdin. When it comes to Shavuos HaPikadon, it does not matter whether the Shavuos is done in the courtroom, out of the courtroom. You're going to be Chayev. So too, when it comes to Shavuos HaEdus, it doesn't matter whether the Shavuos is in the courtroom or out of the courtroom. You're going to be Chayev. And that's all the Shita Rameir. The Chachamim v'Rabbanim Savrei Domina V'Uka Basra. The Chachamim say, no, when you're learning a Gzeirah Shavah and you're taking a halacha from A to B or from B to A, you gotta fit it in contextually. Ma pikadna mushma mipiatzmo Chayev af Edus mushma mipiatzmo Chayev. So it's the same starting point. Mushma mipi atzmo is learned out from Shavuos HaPikadon. We're taking mushma mipi atzmo and we're bringing it over to Shavuos HaEdus. So far, so good. However, uki ba'asra. But now we put it into Shavuos HaEdus in its proper context. When am I giving testimony? In the courtroom. Ma mushma mipi achir mebeisden, af shlo bebeisden, af mushma mipi atzmo bebeisden, in shlo bebeisden lo. Look, all this is happening in the courtroom. When I'm placed under oath, I'm obviously being placed under oath in the courtroom. In other words, it's the judges who are putting me under oath. They're adjuring me. So obviously, Shavuos HaEdus contextually is talking about in the courtroom. So even though I'm learning the halacha from Shavuos HaPikadon, and I'm bringing it over to Shavuos HaEdus, but domina v'uka ba'asra, but put it in its proper place. It's talking about in the courtroom. Amar, we turn to the top of the Amud Beis. So Amar lu Rapapa imi pikadon gamri la Rabbanan dekol amalo pligi de domina umina. Rapapa says, look, I'd like to argue this whole point, meaning that they're not arguing about domina v'uka basra versus domina umina. Everyone in theory is in agreement with the principle of domina umina. When I'm learning halacha from A to B, no context. I take it from A, I move it to B with no context whatsoever. And everyone agrees to that. What is the issue over here between Rameir and the Chachamim? Ela hainu taima derabanan demaisa lebekal v'chomer. So according to the Chachamim, the limud is not learned through a gzeira shava, but rather it's learned through a kav v'chomer. Let's consider. The Gemara spells out the kav v'chomer. Uma mi pi acherim chai v'af mi pi atzma lo kol shekein. Look, by shvos eidus, the Torah describes being placed under oath. You are adjured by the court. And you're chai v'karbon ol v'yorid. So it's a simple kav v'chomer. If others are causing you to swear and you're chai v'karbon ol v'yorid, if you swear on your own, you're for sure going to be chai v'karbon ol v'yorid. Now, if we're learning out through a kavachomer, we also have the principle of dayo. In other words, when I'm taking a halacha and bringing it through a logical argument, I can't end up any greater in chumra than I did for my starting point. My starting point is mushman bipi acherim. That's obviously only in the courtroom. Mushman bipi atmo can only be in the courtroom. So that is the kavachomer using the principle of dayo. A question which Rishonim ask already is, when we say kavachomer, you don't punish somebody based on a kavachomer, over here, isn't that a violation of the rule of ancient onshim and adin? So I looked into. So the Ritva answers, the Ritva says no. The Ritva says because over here it's not a punishment, it's a karban. And the karban is not a punishment, it's a kapara. And so you can use a kavachomer in order to bring about a karban. That's one answer to the issue. Actually, there are other answers as well. Anyway, So they say to Rav Papa that the issue is not how we learn Gzeira Shava using the principle of either Domina Mina versus Domina Vukabasra, but rather the issue is whether you were using a Gzeira Shava or we're using a Kav HaChomer. It was Rav Papa who just made this point. So they say to Rav Papa, no, we're going to go back to what we originally said. The real way to understand the machlokis is based on how we learn Gzeira Shava, whether it's Domina Mina versus Domina Vuka Basra. And I'll tell you that we're right. We have to be right about this because consider V'hatanan, Mishnah we're going to be seeing at the end of next week. Gabi Pikadon Shavuos Pikadon. Gabi Pikadon. Regarding the Shavuos HaPikadon, meaning the fifth paragraph of the Masechta, and it opens up with, and the Gemara here quotes it, Shavuos HaPikadon Noagis Ba'anashim Uvanashim Berachokim Uvakrovim Bikshirim Uvapsulim Bifnei Beizdin Vishlo Bifnei Beizdin. Shavuos HaPikadon applies to men, women, relatives, non-relatives, meaning it's obviously not an Edus Shavua, it's a Pikadon Shavua, and so therefore you don't need eligibility to testify. You just need to be somebody who can wash something and can swear. And it would apply in and out of the courtroom. Mi pi atzmo, and that's when you're swearing on your own. However, mi pi acherim, but when adjured, when being placed under oath, eino chayv achiach verbo, bi based in divra meir. So that's only in the courtroom according to a meir. V'chachamim omrim, bein mi pi atzmo, bein mi pi acherim, kevin shekach verbo chayv. And the chachamim say, whether you're under oath, whether you yourself are making the oath, as long as you make a denial, you're going to be chayav. Now, that's the Mishnah in Shavuos HaPikadon. Now, the Gemara here makes its argument, and it's a really strong argument. Mushma mi pi acherim bi pikadon menalehu. Mushma mi pi acherim. Where is it mentioned in Pikadon? The answer, of course, is it's not mentioned in Pikadon, as I mentioned in the beginning. Mushma mi pi acherim is learned out from Shavuos HaEdus, and we're learning it from Shavuos HaEdus to Shavuos HaPikadon using the Gzeira Shava. So Minalu L'Rabbanan D'Chayev Lav D'Gamer Le'Me Edus. We learn it out from Edus. Ushma Mina B'Dom Mina Mina Pligi. And so obviously what we're doing over here is we're basically using the argument of Dom Mina Mina, meaning it's clearly a Gzeira Shava which is connecting the two, both according to Rameir and according to the Chachamim. So now Rav Papa, now you know the Mishnah. I mean, Rav Papa always knew the Mishnah in the fifth parak. So Rav Papa's response is Miahi in. Oh, okay, fine. Meaning, if I'm learning the fifth paragraph of Shavuos HaPikadon, and you ask me what's the machlokes and Rameir and the Chachamim, it has to be Gzeira Shava. It has to be. You're right. However, all I'm saying is Meha Lekel Mishma Mina. But if all I had was our Mishnah Shavuos HaEdus, I could give an alternative explanation. You're right. Ultimately, the Gzeirah Shavah explanation and whether or not Domina Umina versus Domina Vuka Basra, ultimately, that is the explanation. I agree with you. And once they're learning the fifth parak, I agree with you. But as long as we're learning just the fourth parak by itself, you could give another pshat. And I did offer another pshat. It's based on Kav V'Chomer. That's a good question. Right. On these methodology questions, you know, you stump me every time because, you know, the Rambam gives a psak halach in terms of the shitas, but he doesn't tell us which methodology he favors. Okay. The chayavnos don't ashvu. No, Rav Papa ultimately concedes the point. Rav Papa concedes the point, meaning that the real way to explain the machlokas is using the argument of how we make Gzeirah Shavah, to what extent we're making the Gzeirah Shavah. Okay. V'chayavnos don shvuah. Let's finish up to the Mishnah. Minah animili, as we pointed out already a couple of times, a most unusual circumstance in halacha where you're going to bring a carbon olah v'yareid even if you're amazed. Right? So the Gemara says, how do I know that? Tanu rabbanan b'kula nemar ba'em v'nalam, v'kan lo nemar ba v'nalam, l'chayav al amezik ishogei. And the Gemara gives the explanation. You'll look in Perikei of Vayikra, you're going to see that by Tumas Mikdash, I just blanked. There's a third one over there. That's exactly the point. By Edus, no. So there's Tumas Mikdash, there's one other. Okay, anyway, sorry for the mental block. Thank you. Okay, thank you. So by Baruch Hashem. So by Tumas Mikdash, by Shavuos B2, the Torah says Vinalam. In the Pasuk regarding Edus, the Torah does not say the word Vinalam, which means that even if you're saying it, even if it's Bemezid, you know that you have testimony. You know you're swearing incorrectly, falsely. Nevertheless, you're still going to be chayav karban olah v'yareid. And when we studied this halach over yesterday, so I suggested that it's almost as if the Torah is conceding that I know it's really hard to give testimony. I know it is. And even if you are deliberately falsifying information that you don't know testimony, the Torah, I don't want to say gives you a pass, but in other words, allows a kapara through a karban because it's really hard. Al shigigaso im zadon ha'edus. What's an example? So Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav, Ba'omer Yodei Ani Sheshvuah Zeh Asurah. Aval Eini Yodei Im Chayav Nalav Karban Im Lo. I know I shouldn't be making this Shvuah. I know I am lying under oath and saying that I don't have testimony. I just didn't know that there was a carbon ramification. That's considered a shogeg. And we said this back in the previous paragraph regarding Shvuah's Bitui. And finally, Ein Chayav Nal Shigasa Grei Dasa. So the Gemara says, and what if it's a total shogeg? Meaning, when we say total shogeg in this context, it means I misremembered. Okay, I know we hear that often in Congress. Right? He misremembered. Meaning, he didn't think he had testimony, and while swearing, he literally, it escaped his memory for the moment. So under those circumstances, he's not going to bring a carbon. So, lema tanila, the Rav Kana v'derav Asi. So the Gemara says, now you remember the story we said over a couple days ago, where Rav Kana and Rav Asi were saying over shir from Rav, and each one of them is swearing. This is what Rav said. Now they don't agree with each other. And this was while Rav was alive. Each one of them had their own version of what Rav said, and finally they went back to Rav, and they both swore that this is what Rav said, and they went back to Rav, and obviously only one of them is right. They both can't be right, and Rav said only one of you is right. And to which the other one said, "Did I make a shvuah sheker?" And Rav's response is, "Nah, you're not going to be chayv a carbon for that. I understand they're living after the base of Mikdash, but this is not something which would bring about a shvuah sheker." And remember, the language over there was libcha anascha, meaning at the time you thought what you were saying was correct. So what we're saying now seems to agree with what Rav said. So the Gemara says, "Afagav denan itzirich." So the Gemara says, "No." Even though we have our Mishnah, I still need Rav to teach me that halacha over there. Because, look, here by Shavuos Eidos, the Torah does not say the word v'nalam. So in other words, what qualifies as a shogeg? Something that smacks of of something that looks more like a shogeg. But over there where the Torah, whereby Shvua Sheker, the Torah says the words Vinalam, one might have thought that even if at the time you thought what you're doing is right, that still falls under the category of Shogeg, and you'd still be Chayva Karban. So Kamashwan. That's why even though I know this Halach is true by Shvua Seidus, I wouldn't necessarily have known it by Shvua Sheker, and that's why I need Rav to teach me over there that no, that also falls under the category of not Shogeg, and therefore you wouldn't be Chayva Karban over there. Similar to the idea that over here, when you swear that you don't know testimony and you really think you don't know, you're not going to be Chayva Karban.